for joining us. I'm going to have to show you a picture that you wouldn't believe if I told you. It is from a Big Ten coach that I actually forgot was a Big Ten coach. I'm going to do that after I tell you about Arthrex because holy smokes. In fact, he looks like somebody that might be an employee at Arthrex because of the type of work that they do. They are right at the forefront of developing surgical and orthopedic technologies to put everybody from weekend warriors to professional athletes back in the game. That's what they're passionate about. That's what their employees are passionate about. And the one thing I love most about Arthrex is the way they treat people. They understand their job is incredible and incredibly important and vital to the industry. And so they continue to expand. They've brought thousands of jobs to the upstate and to Pendleton, Sandy Springs, to that area. And they continue to expand with more buildings, more manufacturing space, more testing space, and more common space for employees to have a good time at work, whether it's daycare. That's one of the newest buildings there is for daycare for the children of employees. On-site medical clinic for you and your family. Gourmet chef and a beautiful kitchen. You're talking about athletic fields and pickleball courts. And, I mean, the list goes on and on with great amenities and benefits all over the place. People at Arthrex love working there. You will, too. To find out how you can be a part of their team, go to careers.arthrex.com. Before we get back to football, there are several things that I'm just not 100% sure what it is. Ben, I need you to see this picture. This is, I guess it's a Northwestern Media Day situation. They're doing some construction there. It is Chip Kelly wearing construction gear.
I thought that was AI almost.
I did, too. It's a real picture, Ben. That's number one. I have no idea what to do with that. Number two, we've gotten a couple of texts about it, so we'll discuss. It is, I hate to say this, it is an annual rite of passage that ESPN layoffs take place basically in late July. And we've gotten a lot of folks talking about Ryan Clark yesterday, who was literally fired during a show he was on. I've never seen anything like this. Carl Ravitch was let go today.
Yeah, Ryan Clark, Carl Ravitch, Tom Pelissero. Did I say that right?
That sounds right.
I think that's right. Yeah. NFL insider guy. David Lloyd, one of their longtime anchors. That one's I like David Lloyd. Stephanie Bell, Charles Davis, Cam Newton, and Bart Scott, who was one of their radio hosts. Part of this is, you know, they have absorbed NFL Network, and so they're having to cut NFL people because they just have too many. Part of it is, I'm not real sure. I think maybe just trimming the fat. And then there's Ryan Clark. I don't know that he falls under either of those categories. Ryan Clark has just turned into an absolute jerk on the air. People don't want to work with him. He talks down to them. If they're not a player, he doesn't respect anything they have to say about anything. And there's been, you know, and in addition, he's become a political magnet. And I don't think he's been good for business. And I used to like the content Ryan Clark used to give you, the insight, I used to really like. But he has changed. And many people suggesting that he's one of those guys was going to get the axe either way.
It felt like there was some reporting that they were talking about it. I think I read in The Athletic, they did a big piece about it, like January, February of this year, they were talking about potentially doing this because of some things that happened during last football season where, I mean, there's one clip where Dan Graziano is on a panel and he basically told him, you don't know anything because you're not a player. I mean, that's basically what it is. And Graziano was like, don't condescend to me like that. I mean, I can have a difference of opinion from you. And that was not alone. So I agree with you on Clark. I felt like as a lot of people didn't like Clark wading into cultural waters. He also had a podcast there where that was basically what he did. you know, I would see clips, and I would say about half the clips I would get annoyed by, and half of them I kind of like. Like, he talked about being a family man sometimes and a father. So there was a, in my opinion, there was a mixed bag with Ryan Clark. But increasingly, he became a little more brash and a little less willing to get in a conversation. For whatever reason, that just felt like something that he did. Mm-hmm. It became a little more abrasive.
Carl Ravitch, that one surprises me, but as long as he's been around, I would imagine that was a big old contract.
So Sam, his son, who works for ESPN Suns, called some women's basketball. We've gotten friendly. I wouldn't say like we text all the time, but we talk occasionally. And I love Carl Ravitch. And I think this is one of those things where like ESPN's investment in baseball is way down. And Carl Ravitch likely was commanding a hefty salary. And probably they were trying to like find things for him to do because they're not putting on a baseball game every Sunday and they are sort of reorienting away from Major League Baseball in kind of a significant way. What's fascinating is I literally watched Carl Ravitch call a baseball game on Thursday. He called the Phillies-Mets game on Thursday night. And now, less than a week later, he's out. Which, given that Ryan Clark was fired moments after we saw him on TV yesterday, 5 days is not that big of a deal. But I would imagine David Lloyd was probably pretty expensive. Ravitch was probably pretty expensive. Ravitch, if he wants to work, he'll find work. I think Ravitch is an excellent baseball play-by-play guy. If he wants to do studio work for MLB Network or something, they will make room for Ravitch. He's very talented and I think a very credible face and voice. The NFL Network thing is fascinating here, Ben, because ESPN acquired NFL Network, at least a portion of NFL Network.
Right.
And essentially, it feels like they basically said, all right, now, we've got it. What do we do? Like, they're cutting, and I understand some of it is redundancy, but wouldn't the redundancy be a reason not to acquire it in the first place?
Yes, but at the same time, you're also buying your competition on some things, and that's maybe bad for the consumer, but it's not bad for business.
Right. That makes sense. That makes sense. I felt like when I was reading it the whole time, they were like, yeah, they acquired NFL Network and essentially realized they were going to have to fire a lot of NFL Network employees, which we talk about this all the time. When Disney does this with ESPN, the vast majority of the people they let go are people like back of house, not like the multi-million dollar talent. It's the people back of house when they really reorient. And so it sounds like there are a lot of people at NFL Network that are going to lose their jobs this week.
Yeah. When there's a merger, there's always people get cut. I mean, and that's sort of what this was, a little, you know, a more of a merger. 1, 2, 3. Four of the eight prominent names were NFL related, you know, like Cam Newton. I don't know that Cam cares that he got fired, and he didn't really do much for you. I mean, he's on First Take, but that's a piece that you can do without.
I feel like he's going to have a show on Bravo.
Yeah.
You know, he's going to have some kind of personality-driven show where he can wear his hats and his crazy clothes,
sure,
and he'll be all right.
I could see Cam Newton hosting some kind of reality show one day.
100%. I still want to know how much money Auburn paid him.
And then there's the thing, that they didn't pay him anything. Quark, they just made a big donation to his dad's church.
The church fixed itself, Ben. That's what happened. The church fixed itself.
You know, and then there's the, at the same time, and it feels like this happened 2 years ago, where the Pat McAfee and Stephen A. Smith contract information, credible or not, sounds like it's leaking out that Pat McAfee, some are reporting, is going to make $60 million a year? What?
All right.
What?
I have questions about it. I'm glad you brought this up because
who set that market? What's the competition? Who is it that was going to pay him $55 million and ESPN said, I got to pay him $60?
Let me ask this, okay? Let me ask this because I asked the same question. What's the market for Pat McAfee? Isn't Pat McAfee an exceptional potential Barstool employee?
He is a Barstool employee that is working for ESPN, is essentially what he is right now.
So I feel like you're always going to be sort of chasing the Barstool ghost, where Dave Portnoy has more money than sense, and he'll just throw an exorbitant number out at
Would
McAfee.
They have paid him that much, though? I did not consider them. I was thinking more network.
I don't know. I feel like Barstool would give him more money to work less, or maybe similar money to work less. If you're thinking about all the other stuff that McAfee's doing with Game Day and all the, you know, the wrestling promos and the stuff that he's doing there, he's got a lot of irons in the fire. He also has access to really good guests as a part of ESPN that he might not have if he's, you know, elsewhere. I think that's a mutually beneficial contract, but I'll admit, $60 million is, I mean, that is a lot.
Well, see, and they, you're right, he has a lot of irons in the fire because they require that of him. They've done the same thing with Stephen A. Smith to where they have backed off a little bit, they being ESPN. But, you know, a couple of years ago, the guy was falling asleep on set because they were working him to death. I mean, they really were. They were working him to death. Now they were paying him, but I don't know. You hear $60 million and then other people like Ravitch being fired. It just is not. It doesn't sit well. Care to guess how much McAfee made career in his career earnings in the NFL?
Oh, man.
He was a good punter.
I was going to say good punter, and I know the Colts, it was a multi-year contract that he walked away from. I'm going to say $23
million. $15
million. Okay. That may have been the whole contract, if I'm thinking about it right. Because he walked away from it. He could have made more millions in the contract he signed.
He's going to make that in 4 months next year, if reports are correct.
To be, and I want to make sure, he's a good podcast host, you know. I wouldn't know anything about that because he's on during our time slot. But, you know, he does a nice little show. And then to be one of a panel of five on College Game Day.
I mean, there's obviously a market for him, and I'm not denying that. He's not my cup of tea. But he appeals to the younger generation, and they are trying to get that, capture that audience. I get it. $60 million? $60 million.
You know, I'm thinking about this. You know, Jeff says, would Barstool want him, though? He'd swamp the other Barstool personalities. I bet Portnoy and the others wouldn't want to be overshadowed like that. I think you have misunderstated the business acumen of Dave Portnoy, though.
I certainly have.
Getting McAfee back in Barstool, because people have pointed out he was on Barstool before he went to ESPN. Getting him back in Barstool does two things. Number one, you're bringing a guy home that really does fit your personality. Number two, last year, and we were talking about who would pay him $60 million, maybe not Barstool, but Fox would. Think about what Fox did with their partnership with Barstool in pregame last year and how much of a rah-rah, like, environment that was. McAfee's energy might be a little more at home on a Fox set with what they tried to do with the Barstool personality, and it was a little clunky and it didn't really work all that well, bringing Portnoy in to, like, wave the Michigan flag. But if you're Fox and you're carrying West Virginia, Texas Tech on Big Noon, you don't want to put Pat McAfee in the middle of that? I mean, that would be awfully enticing if it's me. $60 million is a... It feels like they're making the same mistake they made with Stephen A., though, right? Like, where they paid so much money to Stephen A., and they're like, hey, we're going to stick Stephen A. everywhere we do anything and make everything about him. Like how the NBA playoffs became a referendum on the Knicks because Stephen A. is just being a fanboy every day. It's like, well, you kind of be clowned yourself, ESPN, but you have to find something for him to do. He's got to be there. Feels like they're doing the same thing with McAfee. You know, it could also be, Ben, that maybe they try to pivot away like they did with Bayless. Maybe they pivot away from Stephen A. and they put more eggs in the McAfee basket and they're kind of shifting their priorities a little bit.
Maybe they have they just want a backup plan to Stephen A. if he, you know, pursues other things like politics or whatever. But I think they need them both.
I kind of think
they're similar, but they're also pretty different.
I kind of think so too. I think that I think that's where I would land on it.
Side note, I way underestimate Barstool because I still think of Barstool as just the college frat kind of thing, you know, when it first started, and it's just stupid stuff and no credibility. And then didn't Portnoy buy it back for like $2 billion?
It's billion with a B.
It's
now.
A multi-billion dollar company that just started as it was just sort of fan driven by different schools, right?
It was like Deadspin-ish.
Yeah.
Like when Deadspin was starting, it was a little bit like maybe a little more video.
How in the world?
Whew! Unbelievable. All right, let's take a break. And we come back, we'll have more nonsense coming your way. Hour 3 continues next.
From the first kickoff in Death Valley to the final pitch in Doug Kingsmore, we're your flagship station for Clemson athletics all year long. The Clemson Athletic Network lives right here on The Roar. On The Roar, where every day is game day. The only thing louder than the upper deck on a Saturday. Score! The Upstate Sports Authority. 105.5 and 97.5. The Roar, where every day is game day.
Hey, this is KDE over here at Engineer Sleep. Before I ever built mattresses, I played college football. And one thing sports taught me is that your body only performs as well as you let it recover. That's why I take so much pride in what...
I know Engel's going to pick me up with deals, friendly faces, great service, Starbucks, perhaps most importantly. The pharmacy, I told you, incredibly well-stocked when I went yesterday. And just everything that you need, including salads for lunch. It's a beautiful thing when you know you can rely on it, and you can rely on Ingles every single day.
I did have the salad bar today. I did not worry about the lettuce because almost all of their produce is local.
Bingo.
And so far so good.
Look, I don't know if Ingles wants us to say this or not, but you will note that they were notably absent from the list of places that you had to worry about.
That's
with whatever
right.
The nonsense is. Ingles low prices, love the savings. Can I say one thing about that? Have you seen the newest one?
The newest what?
The newest recall?
No.
This is a toughie, Ben. I don't know. It's somewhere on the scale of 1 to 10 because it is for everybody. Ben, we've got some problems with garlic powder. Okay. Nationwide recalls of garlic powder due to risk of bacterial contamination. And I know because People.com posted about it last night. Jars of garlic powder sold at discount stores across Canada have been recalled due to potential bacterial contamination.
We will rebuild.
So just when we solved the lettuce caper of 2026, we now have a garlic powder problem.
You put garlic powder on your lettuce, it's double jeopardy. Right there. You're you're a dead man walking.
You just played Russian roulette at that point.
I would not have thought that.
Garlic powder.
I would not have thought that. Hey, a little more on the Barstool Sports valuation. Portnoy basically actually bought it back for $1. But the company was not worth $1. $1 and 50% of proceeds from future sales or monetization events. So Penn sold it back to Portnoy thinking this is going to be worth way more in the future. Current valuations are anywhere from $1 billion to, their website says $5 billion, but people... I don't know how far out you're valuing that company, but anyway. The point is it's worth a whole lot of money from something that just started as a glorified chat room almost.
I got to be honest, Ben. I'm hung up on this. The difference between $1 billion and $5 billion is a lot of billions. Can we not narrow down? I mean.
Yeah, I don't want to get into all
there's
that.
There's no
They're
way.
Saying that it's just a. Valuations are, especially for something like that, or I've got to imagine that's a pretty tough business to put a value on.
We're talking, we're doing accounting tricks kind of a thing with all that?
Yeah, I mean, okay. If you're selling, it's worth $5 billion. If you're buying, it's worth $1 billion.
Yes, that's right. Meet in the middle. This is kind of random, but I feel like we haven't had enough James Franklin propaganda on the show. This is becoming a James Franklin propaganda outlet, okay? I'm just going to let you know that.
No, it's not. I don't know where this came from or where you're going, but okay. I'm interested.
We're at ACC kickoff last week, and Eric McClain said it, and he was far from the only one. It felt like every conversation that I had about Virginia Tech was like, you know, let's just find seven. Can we get to 7 wins? Let's just get 7. And I'm sitting here looking at Virginia Tech, and I'm going, now, wait a second. Hold on. I got a guy in James Franklin that, until last year, when things totally cratered under the weight of national championship expectations, was allergic to 7 wins. Like, he's going to win 9 every year, pretty much. COVID, eh. I'm going to just respectfully decline any comment on COVID or consideration on the COVID year in this conversation. Ben, I was looking at this. Remember a couple years ago, SMU comes in the league, and we looked at who they brought back? Or maybe it was last year. And we're like their top 8 tacklers and their top 6 receivers and their top 2 running backs and their top passer. They brought them all back. Oh, my goodness. Maybe there's something to that. That was when they came into the league. They just returned everybody. Would you believe that there are 0 teams in the ACC that bring back their top passer, rusher, receiver, and tackler from last year?
Passer, rusher, receiver, tackler.
0 teams bring back their leader in all 4 categories.
Hmm.
In this era, probably not totally shocked. A lot of 1-year guys. If you're a lower level, you probably jump in at least one of those guys.
How many are bringing back 3 of the 4?
2.
Oh. And you're going to tell me Virginia Tech and somebody else.
Virginia Tech is 1. They bring
SMU
back,
the other one.
It's not SMU. In fact, SMU's not even on the 2. They don't even bring back 2. Virginia Tech, their top rusher, their top receiver, and their top tackler, all back. Marcellus Hawkins, who had 749 rushing yards, who was the really the backup to, well, he was a lead back, but Kyron Jones did a lot of the rushing. Aiden Green, over 500 yards receiving, and then Caleb Spencer had 67 tackles, 8.5 tackles for loss last year for Virginia Tech. The other team that returns their leading rusher, receiver, and tackler is Miami. So Miami and Virginia Tech are alone in who they bring back in this conference. Okay. Miami.
Who was their top tackler?
Muhammad Toure, 84 tackles.
Okay.
A little bit of a neglected guy. I put him on my all-ACC linebacker group. The linebackers in the ACC, by the way, are unbelievable. I can see why Luke Farelli wanted out. An easier league to play linebacker in the SEC. ACC absolutely loaded at linebacker. Farelli, you know what? Maybe he can be all-conference in the SEC. He wouldn't be all-conference in the ACC. I'll tell you that right now. Muhammad Toure, leading tackler for Miami. Now, their numbers 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 9, 11, 12, and 14 tacklers are gone. So I don't want to create a narrative about Miami that's not right, okay? Only 3 of their top 14 are back. But when you just look at the top line guy, Mark Fletcher and Malachi Toney, and then leading tackler. Think about that, though. And you can look at it one of 2 ways, all right? The one way, maybe the main way, is do I want continuity after 3-9? Is it really a good thing? Do I just want to start over after 3-9? I think it's a good thing because James Franklin brought some dudes with him. They have probably a little bit higher floor because they have guys back. You know, not only that, like Kamari Copeland is a all-conference type defensive tackle coming back. I think Noah Chambers is a good player. Like, they've got some good players on the defense that Brent Pry is coaching. Ben, I think Virginia Tech is going to be good now. And I keep thinking about it. They're going to be good now. Everybody keeps sort of hedging on Virginia Tech. Like, well, let's wait till next year. Why? Ethan Grungmeier is a top half quarterback in the league right now, in my opinion. He's top half, minimum top half. With their schedule...
And what's their number? Seven?
Their
six and a
number
half?
Is, let me double check what that is. I wrote all those down.
There's a great chance they start 5-0. If half of how you feel is accurate, VMI, Old Dominion, at Maryland, at Boston College, Pitt. That's their first five.
They should win all those.
Yeah, should. We'll see.
Now, I mean, the schedule gets tougher at the end. Like, you might be going, okay, maybe playing at Clemson, at SMU, and at Miami, you're probably not winning more than nine, okay? But
well, I mean, your six of your last seven are certainly not gimmies. At Cal, Georgia Tech, at Clemson, at SMU, Stanford, at Miami. And then Virginia.
And then your rivalry game. Yep. So listen, I'm not saying they're going 11-1. I'm just sitting here thinking, you know, in a league where we don't know much, we know more about Virginia Tech. Like, who's running out there first? We know more about Virginia Tech than we do most teams. And I feel like there's this thought that Virginia Tech, we got all these question marks and things like that. I just think where people are talking about them like a question mark. And I'm looking around going, I got way more questions about some of these others.
Their total is 6.5.
I mean, I would go over that. It's a -155 is what I've got down.
The danger there is that they have to start 5-0, probably have to start 5-0 to get to that number. And that's tough for a new team with a new coach. I mean, that's a big bet.
What if I give you Grunkmeyer, who we saw in the bowl game? Where are you on Grunkmeyer? Do you agree that he's the top half of the league quarterback?
I'd have to think about that. I don't know that the Clemson game is a great measuring stick for him either, because of how bad Clemson was on the back end.
Like, he's not better than Mensa, and he's not better than Jennings, and he's not better than Heinschel, and he's not better than C.J. Bailey. We'll get those out of the way. But like, is he better than Lincoln Keenholz? Is he better than Bo Pribula?
I kind of put him in the what we think about Christopher Vezina right now.
Okay.
Maybe more in that range.
So you just basically roll the dice with those guys and see what comes out. If you're telling me I got a 750-yard rusher, basically, from last year, 749. I've got Aiden Green, who was there. I've got Quayshon Brown, who had over almost 1,300 yards the last 2 years at Duke. I've got starters returning and imported all over the offensive line. They've got a defense where a lot of my top players are back. There's continuity there, and the guy who coached the defense last year is returning. I was looking at that going, you know, of all the teams to say we don't know much about, I was dissatisfied with the Virginia Tech discourse last week. I was dissatisfied because I felt like the fact that they have players returning that we know are productive, either in lesser schemes or the same scheme that they're in, was sort of being discounted in favor of a long-term vision for James Franklin.
What's your general thought, though, on James Franklin developing quarterbacks specifically? Did he do a great job with Drew Aller?
No.
Even back at the beginning with Christian Hackenberg and – who do you have, Sean Clifford before Aller?
You know, I think...
I would say Sean Clifford was successful. I mean, probably got the most out of that guy.
I think it's fair to look at Penn State and go, quarterback development had a lower ceiling than you think, basically with everybody. And wide receiver development. I mean, they recruited great at wide receiver. They, like Julian Fleming... consensus five-star from Ohio State, transferred in there, did almost nothing. They had a lot of guys in there that did not produce that Penn State recruited. I think those are fair questions offensively with quarterback and receiver with James Franklin.
I believe I'm right in saying this. Penn State had four straight four-year starters at quarterback.
That's honestly, that's probably true.
That's crazy. So, yeah.
Let me look at this real quick. We'll take a break here. Look at this. Trace McSorley's the other guy. People are
yes.
People are getting in with that. Great work. Great work, Adam's Curving Text Line. Penn State. I would say this about James Franklin. Probably more OC dependent, which I don't really know much about his OC right now. Probably more OC dependent. Like, the production was up, you know, 3-4 years ago. Even last year. You know what's crazy? Even last year, they averaged 31 a game. Like, they've averaged 30-plus in the last 4 years offensively. 31-plus, as a matter of fact. They just didn't average 35, which they needed if they were going to win some of these games. Interesting stuff. Final segment. We got more to come on Out of Bounds right after this.
If you don't agree with one of our hosts,
you're an idiot.
Let us know on the Pratt Injury Lawyers phone line at 864-654-ROAR. The Roar, where every day is game day.
One Tom Plummer. Call the plumber whose name is his number. One Tom Plummer. This is a great group of folks. They know how to get the job done for you. Professional plumbers. They're going to treat you right. They give you high-quality, top-of-the-line service in those most disastrous circumstances, the clogs, the hot water issues, the drain issues that have got you totally paralyzed with fear and trepidation about how your home's going to function today or how your business is going to function today. 24-hour same-day service guaranteed with one Tom Plummer. Clemson grads on and operated. Mike and the great folks there. They do an amazing job. Call the plumber whose name is his number. That's one Tom Plummer.
Forget the national noise.
Program 654 Roar is the number if you want to get in. Beat the buzzer. Pratt Injury Lawyers phone line. Adams and Co. Roofing text line. We've been really all over the place today. We've done a lot of good stuff. One thing that I thought was very interesting, Ben, that we have not gotten to today, and I read this actually during the show, maybe midway through the show. We talked about Greg Sankey's comments yesterday. He had some comments about the Clemson-Ole Miss situation. Have you seen these quotes?
I did not.
Okay, now.
Sankey's weighing in on this.
Yes. He was asked about it. And he said to Sports Talk Mississippi, so this was maybe a Radio Row situation, okay? Quote, God, this is going to, I wish I had read this an hour ago. We all live in a glass house, is what he said. We could probably stop right there and just let that sit for a second.
So everybody's doing it.
Uh-huh.
Okay, number one.
And I respect that frustrations boil over from time to time. But the environment that we're in with representatives, NIL representatives, agents making phone calls, we're in a very different environment, which puts us into those glass houses. You know, we didn't go there on our own. We just were placed there, Ben. So we all have to be careful about throwing stones, including me. End quote. That's your leader of college football right there, folks.
What are you saying, man?
Let's just not worry about it. Let me tell you something. Let me tell you something, okay?
Is that an endorsement to cheat?
Yeah. Let me tell you what this is, okay? Famously, Mike Slive had a rule, all right? And this was, it wasn't like day one because they had problems. But eventually, Mike Slive, after some of the Phil Fulmer Alabama stuff, and like there were several of these things that happened. He basically was like, hey, snitches get stitches, guys. We need to shape up, okay, around each other. And it worked. The SEC quit snitching on each other, by and large. Greg Sankey has taken that a step further. In that, Not only is he ignoring evidence that is right in front of his face, you could easily no comment. I'm not going to. It's an investigation. I'm not going to comment. Just hide behind some nicety. But right here, this is what he does. Now, I want to make clear that I'm reading his quote. This is a direct quote, Alex Byington on 3 from Sports Talk Mississippi today at SEC Media Days. This is what he says. He says, Dabo better be careful. That's what he said. Is that not how you read that? We all live in a glass house, so we better not throw a stone. Isn't that what he said? He's saying Dabo did it too. Is he not alleging that Dabo cheated? Is that not what he's saying?
Yeah, when you mention glass houses, certainly. So I would say, if that is the case, Dabo in his glass house did in fact throw a stone. He threw a boulder at you, in fact, and you've done nothing about it. You have not said anything about Sweeney cheating. So if he is indeed in a glass house, then why hasn't anybody thrown anything back at him? You know why? Because there's nothing to throw.
Where's your evidence that everybody's doing it? You know the easiest thing in the world, the most conniving, little snivelly, little weaselly way out of any hard situation is go, well, you know. He basically did the boys will be boys.
That's, you know, that burns me up because that also means if everybody's doing it, that means there's 16 teams that you are responsible for and you are acknowledging that they're all cheating.
Yes.
Man, that's terrible.
That's Greg Sankey's leadership, folks. And I'm going to tell you this. I'm going to tell you this right now. Greg Sankey's losing it. It's not now. It's not now. It ain't over now. But let me tell you something. He is on an island. Nobody cares what he thinks. Let me be the anti-Feinbaum. Nobody, not a single person in any other league gives a fly-in, you know what Greg Sankey thinks about anything. Otherwise, they wouldn't be totally aligned against him and opposed to him in every single situation. They are totally opposed to what he's doing. He can't drag the sport wherever he wants to go. He has no influence whatsoever. He can't even control this obvious pretender, this charlatan, this phony baloney, Pete Golding, who's sniping his own programs in his own league and basically eating them for breakfast because he doesn't have the stones to do anything about it. This guy has nothing. He has no control over college football. He has no control over Congress. He has no control over his own coaches. He sure as hell doesn't have control over Dabo Swinney or Clemson or anybody else. He has nothing. Greg Sankey has nothing. Nobody cares what you think, and we know your coaches don't care because that answer right there is a guy who is a shriveling, old, decrepit, sitting in a corner in a fetal position, shell of a man. You're a shell of a man, Greg Sankey. If you can't read a piece of paper and apply what it says,
smash down there.
Well, tell me what my house is made of. No, sir. Don't tell me what my house is made of.
I love that Pat Forty wrote a column last night saying the same thing that you and I said, that Walt said, and that was on Sankey's comments yesterday, when you're no longer winning titles, you shift the attention to attendance. Yeah, people are starting to catch on here. And again, I applaud Sankey for being the mouthpiece that he is supposed to be. He is paid to promote a conference. But when it gets to a point where you know that he truly believes what he's saying and he's not just giving you some sales pitch, I get a little nervous. Not going to lie. I get a little nervous that he believes some of the garbage that he is spewing.
It is his job to PR spin the crap out of whatever happens. And what is happening requires spin. Let's be honest. It hasn't always required spin. Right now, it requires PR spin. You do not have an obligation in your job to PR spin obviously bad behavior. That is bad for not just the sport generally, Greg Sankey, that you fancy yourself the Lord and King and Master over, even though you are now subservient to the other leagues who don't want to expand like you want and don't want to rev share like you want and don't want to do anything like you want, and also beat you every time the games matter. They beat you. Every other league beats you. But not only that, you are now openly saying that you're not going to police your own people. A no comment. Listen, if he had given a no comment on this, I would presume that maybe I would come in here and go, you know what? That's interesting because I bet he's ticked. That's what I would think. Even if it's wrong, I would think, you know what? He's ticked. He knows. Golding sucks. He sucks as a person, okay? He's a bad guy, and he knows. And he's had conversations about, hey, maybe not be so obviously a bad guy. Maybe let's do that. This answer right here, he's covering for Golding. The guy's going to be fired in 18 months because he actually can't coach. And he actually might get arrested. DUI Golding out there.
What would he have said if Trinidad Chambliss in the 11th hour would have entered the portal and gone to Miami?
Oof.
Heck, that was sort of legal. What would he have said if Levis goes to LSU, enrolls in class, and then in the 11th hour, while he's in class, transfers again to Clemson or Miami? Like, is it still boys will be boys? Is it still better be careful about the glass houses? Or would it be, I mean, what would his approach be then, you think?
Interesting question. Interesting. I also find it interesting. Well, let me address that first. Because you're right. If it was SEC on SEC crime or ACC on SEC crime, oh, victim. Victimized. Look how strong we are, but also look at us. Poor SEC. They're just stealing our school. Oh, they're stealing our players. Stealing our quarterback. At the last minute, we can't replace them. Here's what another commissioner said about tampering last week. Let's see which one is more commissioner-like. Let's see which one comes off as more of a leader. Quote, the tampering is serious. Whether it's in the league or nationally, those are serious things that people are looking at and certainly have to be dealt with. What I would say is between the College Sports Commission and the NCAA, we have to have support for them to do the work that they're capable of doing in order to hold schools, institutions, and coaches accountable. Now, I wouldn't give that a 10 out of 10, but I dang well sure would give it a higher grade than the mealy-mouthed nonsense that Sankey just gave. That was Jim Phillips 6 days ago at the ACC when asked about tampering. Whether it's in the league or nationally, that's how leaders talk. Now, again, he finished it out with, we can't really do anything because we need these other entities to step up and all this stuff. It's not like the most leadership, but it's way more leadership than that clown showed. I mean, give me a freaking break on that. If you can't stand up to Pete Golding, my 2-year-old would eat your lunch, brother. Pete Golding is the easiest guy in the world to stand up to. That guy is nothing. He's a nobody. He's a fired coach in waiting. That's what he is. He sucks at his job. He sucks as a person. He's going to lose way more games.